Chapter 10. Last Witnesses. The word did not make the gym braver. It made it louder. Miss Claimed moved from mouth to mouth with the nervous speed of a rumor and the weight of a diagnosis. People tried it once, quietly, then looked ashamed of the relief it gave them. A few said it as a question. A few said it like a prayer and corrected themselves too late. Asha Menon watched the room divide itself around a term no one had consented to. At the water table, Harriet Solis sat very still, with both hands around an empty paper cup. Malik Ross's mother kept one palm pressed to the back of her son's neck, not holding him down, only proving he remained there. Near the phone station, a volunteer had stopped pretending to not listen and was writing names on a yellow legal pad with shaking concentration. Mara Vale stood by the east wall with her arms folded. She had chosen the wall because it gave her a view of both exits and the old double doors into the gym. Dan Keene stood beside her, phone in one hand, wedding ring bright against the black case. Elias Crow remained in the middle of the floor. That was the part Asha could not forgive yet. He had placed the word into the room and then stayed where people could look at him. He did not flee from their need. He did not soften into apology. He listened, as if every repetition mattered.
That was not enough to make him trustworthy. It was enough to make him hard to remove. Mina leaned close to Asha. "Tell me we have a plan that is more sophisticated than tackling the grief counselor. We need his records. That sounds like a yes with paperwork."
Asha closed Elias's notebook around her finger to hold the page. "Mr. Crow," she said. He turned immediately, too quickly, like he had been waiting for the correction. "We need to speak privately."
"Yes," Elias said. Mara pushed away from the wall. Asha looked at her. Mara said, "I'm coming. This is medical."
"Dan stays where I can see him," Mara said. Dan gave her a tired, half-smile. "I'll watch the exits from the inside." Mara did not like that. She accepted it anyway. Elias led them through a side door marked "Staff Only" in blue tape. The room he unlocked had once been used for after-school supplies. Plastic bins lined the shelves, markers, glue sticks, construction paper, a broken chess set missing most of the black pawns. Now, one folding table held three laptops, two file boxes, a charging strip, and a stack of paper intake forms banded by category. Asha saw the categories before Elias could move to hide them. Returned support. Orange water. Final second. Unverified.
"Last witnesses," Mara read the last label out loud.
"What's that?"
Elias looked at the box as if it had spoken first. "A bad name for a necessary thing."
"You're collecting us?" Mara said.
"I am trying to keep people alive long enough for better people to collect the data properly." Asha put his notebook on the table.
"You mean me?"
"I hope so."
"Do not make me part of your absolution."
Elias lowered his eyes. For the first time, the gesture irritated Asha less than his calm had.
"Tell me your case definition," she said.
"Doctor, now!"
Elias placed both hands on the back of a folding chair. He did not sit.
"Returned during the blip. Reports recurring dream or waking memory involving dark water and orange light. Reports sensation of a death event, either personal or borrowed, that appears to predate or coincide with disappearance. Additional markers, auditory bleed, phantom injury, compulsive drawing or route seeking, foreign language episode, name displacement, repeated question about cost." Asha opened her tablet.
"That is not a case definition. It is a symptom cluster."
"Yes.
You are sorting people on symptom clusters and handing them an identity.
I am giving them a room where they can say the symptom out loud."
"Your room is now a contamination source." Elias's fingers tightened on the chair. Mara noticed. Asha saw her notice. "You wrote E. Crow in your own notebook," Asha said. "Orange water, backward count, final impact memory, pull direction, east. Then you wrote case. Elias did not answer. Were you going to tell anyone? Mara asked. Yes. When? When I knew how to do it without everyone leaving. Mara laughed once. There was no humor in it. You thought that was your decision? No, Elias said. He looked at her then. I thought it was my failure. The room held that for a moment. Asha disliked the effectiveness of it. She disliked more that it sounded true. Your death event, she said. Elias's mouth moved around silence. Mina softened, which is why Asha loved her, and also why Asha did not let her lead interviews. Elias, Mina said, if you are one of us, we need to know what happened. One of us, Mara said. Elias looked at her. Yes. Mara crossed her arms tighter. Say it correctly. He nodded. One of us. Nia Reyes saw the word for the first time at 11:46 a.m. on a screen with a crack through the upper left corner. The crack split Elias Crow's face in two.
Someone had filmed him in the gym. Not well. Half the audio was coughs, chair legs, and someone whispering, "Is this allowed?" The caption under the video read, "Returned center counselor says some blip victims were misclaimed." Nia watched it once without breathing right, then again. "Not chosen," Elias said in the recording. "Not cursed. Not holy." Nia paused the video with his hand against his chest. The comments were already doing what comments did. Mockery, panic, sunset photos, cult jokes. Then, "My sister keeps drawing the same water. Delete this if fake." There was a private forum linked beneath the post. It had been created 6 minutes earlier. Last witnesses. The name made her tired before she understood why. She clicked anyway. The first pinned post warned against prophecy claims, medical advice, travel, and reenacting final seconds. The rules sounded like someone trying to build a fence around a fire. A new post appeared while she watched. "I was in a mining lift." Then another. "My mom says I was on a bus platform, but I keep smelling smoke." Then, "I think my friend died where I disappeared." Nia stared at that one until the letters blurred. It was not hers. The username was not hers. The story was not hers. That made it worse.
Tess's file folder sat on the table beside the laptop. The traffic camera still lay on top. Nia half turned, Tessa looking at her. The SUV's front bumper already entering the crosswalk, one frame before absence. Nia typed, "I was in the street with Tessa Kim. She was hit when I vanished. She survived long enough to ask if they found me." Her hands hovered. She could feel the crosswalk under her feet, though she was standing on apartment carpet. She could feel Tessa's breath in a hospital room she had never entered. Nia hit post before she could make it prettier. For 11 seconds, nothing happened. Then, someone named Last Witness Admin replied, "You are not alone. If you can, call the volunteer line. Ask for Elias or Dr. Menon." Nia closed the laptop. The room did not get quieter. Elias told the story in pieces. Asha recognized the method. Patients often believed a catastrophe could be controlled if it was divided into small enough sections, vitals, mechanism, timeline, witness statements, clean headings for unclean things. "It was at St. Bridget's Annex," Elias said, "not the church, the school basement. We were using it for emergency shelter intake after the first disappearances started being reported." "During the snap," Asha said. "During the event, yes."
"Visible disappearances had begun around you before your own dusting." "Yes," she wrote that down. "Seconds, not minutes," she reminded herself. The snap had not behaved like a light switch from the inside. The world had registered it as scattered impossibilities, one after another, close enough to be a single wound and messy enough to ruin every clean model.
People were panicking, Elias said. Phones were failing. Not the phones, the people on them. A woman was calling her son and the line went quiet while she was still speaking. A volunteer disappeared beside the coffee urn. Someone opened the door to run and half the sidewalk was screaming. Mara looked away. Elias watched her do it. A man came in with a gun, he said. Mina's pen stopped. Name? Asha asked. Paul Darrow. His wife had disappeared in the parking lot. Their daughter was in the back seat, 5 months old. He thought someone had taken them. Had the child disappeared? Asha asked. Elias closed his eyes briefly. No. No one spoke. He was not making sense, Elias said. No one was. He kept pointing the gun at people and asking where they put her. A teacher tried to calm him down. I told the children to get under the tables. His hand moved, not to his chest this time, down and outward.
Like he was guiding someone small toward the floor. There is a boy behind me, Elias said. Jonah Mills, 12. He had asthma. He had lost his father 3 minutes earlier and kept asking whether dust could trigger an attack. Asha did not write Jonah's name at first. Then she made herself do it. Darrow fired, Elias said. Mare's face changed. She knew the rest before he said it. The bullet was already in the air, Elias said. I know people say that when they mean it happened quickly. I mean it literally. I saw the muzzle flash, I felt my body start to move in front of Jonah, and then I was not there. He looked at the construction paper sun on the wall. The bullet kept going. Mina made a small sound. Elias did not look at her. It hit Jonah in the throat. The room shrank around them. Mara's arms dropped to her sides. You weren't saved, she said. Elias's eyes went to her. No. You were removed. Yes. There it was. Asha heard it click into place with Naya's traffic footage, with Tessa Kim's hospital record, with Mara's ambulance, with Dan's wedding ring returning on a hand that should have died before reaching anyone. The snap had not only taken people from death.
Sometimes it had taken them from the place where they were protecting someone else from death.
Jonah died? Mina asked, though everyone already knew. Elias nodded.
Darrow?
Asha asked. Arrested, convicted, died in prison during the 5 years.
And you returned to the annex?
To the basement. Same room, different paint. They had turned it back into storage. There was a patch in the wall where the bullet ended after Jonah. Elias swallowed. Someone had put a bookshelf there.
Mara said, You checked?
The day after I returned.
Of course you did.
Not accusation, recognition. For a moment, Asha could see the two of them occupying the same ugly logic. Return first, save what can still be saved, then go back to the place where physics continued without you and ask what your absence cost.
Elias looked at his own hands. I started volunteering here because I knew what it was like to come back and find the world had filed your death under someone else's name.
Asha wrote that down and hated that it was a useful sentence.
Your fragment, she said.
Elias almost smiled.
Is that what you call it?
For now?
It is not a power.
I know.
He looked relieved.
That worried her.
When people tell me about the final second, Elias said, I can feel the part they are not saying. Not memories, exactly. Pressure. Direction. The fear underneath the fear. Sometimes the word they cannot find arrives before they do. Amplification? Asha said. Maybe. Empathy. Suggestion? Maybe. Contagion? Elias was quiet. Mara said, Answer her. Sometimes, Elias said. Asha's pen moved. Explain. If the room is already close to it, I can make people hear each other more clearly. Mina said, That sounds gentle, until it doesn't. It is gentle, Elias said. At first, Mara looked at him sharply. There! Asha saw it too. The answer had not been prepared. It had escaped. At first, Asha repeated,
Elias rubbed his thumb against the bare place where a wedding ring would have been. Dan's gesture. He did not notice himself doing it.
The more I listen, Elias said, the easier it becomes to find the place where their last second touches mine.
Identity bleed, Asha said.
Connection.
No.
Use the uglier word until we have earned a better one.
Elias looked tired.
I know Jonah's inhaler was blue, he said. I know Malik's shoulder threw him sideways before any vehicle touched him. I know Harriet's granddaughter hated tangles at the back of her neck. I know Dan Keene's wife uses citrus soap and had taken off her ring twice, but never overnight. Mara's head turned.
What?
Elias went still. Asha felt the room lose temperature. Who told you that? Mara asked.
No one, Elias said.
Dan didn't tell you that.
No.
Elena didn't tell you that.
No.
Mara stepped closer to him. Then why do you know it? Elias did not retreat. Because when he stands near me, part of him is still standing in a doorway with his hand against his chest, trying to decide whether to leave or apologize.
Mara's face emptied.
Asha had seen that expression on surgeons when bleeding revealed itself in a place no scan had predicted.
Stop, Mara said.
Elias stopped.
Immediately.
That saved him from Mara for the next 10 seconds. It did not save him from Asha.
You are not only collecting testimony, she said. You are absorbing it.
I am witnessing it.
You are losing boundary integrity.
Doctor, do not turn pathology into vocation while I am standing here.
Elias looked at her then. Really looked. And for one brief moment, his kindness thinned enough to show the terror underneath. If I call it pathology, he said, then Jonah died because I was sick too late to understand the symptom. By mid-afternoon, the private room had become a clinic, an interrogation chamber, and an argument with chairs. Asha established rules, because rules were the only tool she had that did not change in her hand. No one would use the word misclaimed in new intake interviews until the person had described symptoms unprompted. The flyer would be pulled. The volunteer line script would be rewritten. Any online group would carry medical disclaimers, crisis resources, and warnings against travel, ritual reenactment, cliff-seeking, water immersion, or attempts to recreate a final second. Elias agreed to all of it, too quickly at first. Then, after Asha made him repeat back each restriction, more slowly. Mara stood near the door and watched him the way she watched traffic before stepping into a road. You believe him? Mina asked her quietly. I believe he believes himself. That wasn't the question. It's the answer that matters. In the gym, people had begun arranging chairs without being asked. This was the problem with relief. It organized itself.
Someone had written last witnesses across a stack of index cards. Someone else had crossed it out and replaced it with misclaimed support, then crossed that out too. Malik's mother said, with terrifying calm, that leaving people alone with nightmares had not been a healthcare model either. At 3:17 p.m., Dan Keene's phone rang. He looked at the screen for so long that Mara touched his elbow. Elena? She asked. Dan nodded. He did not answer. The phone rang itself quiet. Mara did not tell him what to do. Asha saw that and decided not to diagnose it. The volunteer line rang next, then again, then three times at once. Mina picked up one phone because she was incapable of watching a preventable system failure without committing herself to it. Ash Street returned support, she said. If this is a medical emergency, hang up and call emergency services. If you are safe, I can take your first name. She listened. Her eyes went to Asha.
Nia, Mina said, writing. Mina covered the receiver. She says her friend was hit when she disappeared. The room altered around the sentence. Elias closed his eyes. Asha pointed at him.
No.
He opened them.
I didn't say anything. You were about to feel something at her.
Mara made a sound that might have been approval. Mina returned to the call. Naya, this is Mina Park. I'm a nurse. I need to ask a few questions before I connect you with anyone else. Asha mouthed, thank you. Mina lifted one finger without looking up. Do not thank me yet. The chairs in the gym kept moving. By 4 o'clock, they had a circle. No one admitted to making it. The first meeting of the last witnesses lasted 26 minutes. Asha timed it. She did not call it a meeting in her notes. She called it uncontrolled peer support assembly with medical oversight, insufficient but present. Mina read that over her shoulder and said, "Poetry is dead. Good. You're going to hurt Elias's feelings. I am counting on it." Elias stood outside the circle instead of inside it. That helped. He had accepted Asha's rule that he could not lead the discussion after disclosing his own status. Harriet Solis objected. Malik's mother objected more politely. Dan said nothing, but sat where he could see both Elias and Mara. Mara stayed on her feet. Asha began with the worst possible sentence for comfort. "We are not here to decide what this means." The circle stared at her. "We are here to record what is happening, without making it worse." "Too late," Malik said.
Several people laughed. Asha allowed it. "Possibly," she said, "but let's not make it worse faster." That earned a second laugh, smaller and steadier. Elias smiled from the wall. Asha ignored him. They went around the circle by first names only. Harriet said she had dreamed of water twice. Malik said he heard tires and smelled smoke only when the room got quiet enough to punish him. Dan said, after a long pause, "I hear Ray Alvarez sometimes. He was driving the ambulance." Mara's eyes closed. Dan kept going. "He had daughters. I don't know their names. I don't want to know their names. I also do want to know, and I hate that." No one tried to comfort him. For once, that was the right thing. Mara spoke last. "I hear the siren," she said. "Not always. When it's bad, ordinary sounds turn into it. Then I know something is about to break." "Do you see the water?" Harriet asked. Mara looked toward the old gym doors. "Yes." "Does it scare you?" "No," Mara said. Then she corrected herself, because she was honest in ways that had teeth. "Not enough." Elias looked down. Asha saw his hand twitch toward his chest and stop before it got there. "Good," she thought. Then he spoke. "May I say one thing?"
Asha considered saying no. The room wanted him to say yes for her. That mattered. "One," she said. Elias stepped no closer. "A witness is not someone who owns what happened," he said. "A witness is someone who refuses to let it be erased." Harriet began to cry, not because the sentence was profound, because it was usable. That was how Asha understood the danger. Not in cruelty, not in obvious madness, in language that fit the wound before medicine had learned its name. Elias continued, softer. "If the word last witnesses is too much, we will change it. If misclaimed is wrong, we will change that too. But until then, none of you has to carry this without a room to put it in." Asha wrote, "Provides relief. High dependency risk." Then, because she was not made of stone, she added, "Relief is real." Asterisk. After sunset, the gym looked gentler than it was. Emergency lamps warmed the cots. Someone had made soup in the church kitchen down the block and sent it over in a pot too heavy for one volunteer to carry. Children had found the bin of markers from Elias's supply room and were drawing pictures at the legal aid table. One of them drew orange water and then covered it with green fish. Mara took the bowl Dan handed her and did not eat from it. "Elena called again," he said.
"You gonna call back?" "I don't know what to say. Try hi." He looked at her. She shrugged. "I save people. I don't do miracles.
Dan smiled despite himself. Then the smile left.
He knew about the soap.
Mara watched Elias across the gym. He was kneeling beside Malik, showing him how to turn off notifications on the forum before strangers could turn fear into weather.
Yeah, she said. I never told anyone that. I know.
What does that make him? Mara looked at the bowl in her hands. The surface of the soup trembled each time someone crossed the floor. Same as us, she said. Dan waited. Mara set the bowl down, with less breaking distance. Across the room, Asha had taken Elias's laptop and changed every password she could justify changing. Mina sat beside her, building a cull script in a document labeled, "Use this or Asha will end you." For the first time all day, Mara almost laughed. Then Elias looked up, not at Mara, past her, toward the east wall. The gym noise fell away from him. Mara saw it happen because it happened to her too. The room remained itself, but something underneath turned. A direction presented itself with the certainty of a road sign glimpsed through rain. East.
Not Seattle East. Not any map east. The east of a place that did not have a sun and still knew where sunset belonged. Elias's lips moved. Mara was too far away to hear the words. She heard them anyway. What did it cost? Dan's hand went to his sternum. Asha looked up from the laptop. For one breath, the four of them were not in the gym. They stood on black water under an orange horizon while names moved beneath the surface, like fish too deep to catch. Then a child dropped a marker. The sound snapped the room back into place. Elias sat down hard on the nearest folding chair. No one but Mara, Dan, Asha, and Mina seemed to notice. Mina whispered, "That was new." Asha's face had gone clinical in the way people go clinical when panic would waste oxygen. "No," she said, "that was progression." Elias stayed after everyone who could sleep had tried to sleep. The gym settled into the uneven quiet of a shelter at night. Cots creaked. Someone snored. Someone cried without wanting company. The phones had finally stopped ringing after Mina changed the outgoing voicemail to a message so stern it sounded like a locked door.
Asha had gone to find coffee and threaten a printer. Mara had taken Dan outside to return Elena's call because he had looked ready to faint rather than press the button alone. For the first time since morning, Elias was not being watched closely. He should have used the privacy to rest. Instead, he opened a new document. At the top, he typed, "Last Witnesses, Guiding Principles." He stared at the words until they stopped looking like words. Then he typed, 1. No one is chosen. Good. 2. No one is cursed. Good. 3. No one crosses alone. His fingers paused. That was not what he had meant to write. He read it again. No one crosses alone. In the dark glass of the laptop screen, he saw the gym behind him and, layered over it, the basement at St. Bridget's. Jonah under the table. Darrow's gun. The bullet already loose from the barrel. The impossible mercy of vanishing before impact. The impossible cruelty of leaving a child's throat where his own body had been. Then the room changed again. Ambulance glass. Bus smoke. Crosswalk headlights. Falling lift. Collapsed shaft. Operating room lights. Names pressed against him from every side, not speaking all at once, not exactly. Waiting for him to make sense of them.
Elias put both hands flat on the table. "Not now," he whispered. The document cursor blinked. He deleted the third principle. For a while he sat with the blank line, Then he typed something else. 3. A life stolen from death is not a gift. He stopped. His pulse beat once in his throat, twice. He should have deleted it. Instead, slowly, because the sentence frightened him and relief had made him weak, Elias finished the line. It is a debt. The gym slept around him. On the other side of the world, Nia Reyes packed Tessa Kim's file into a tote bag. On a planet whose prison yard still held old blood under new flags, Sar Ven began drafting a message to a man she did not trust. Near a hazard fence where cloth names clicked in the dark, Ovek woke, speaking the first syllable of Elias Crow's name in a dead worker's voice. And in the community center on Ash Street, the kind man with the wrong answer saved the document.